From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 14th day of December 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll check in on the agricultural news for the day and also take a look at what's been happening in the world of agricultural weather. Eric Snodgrass from Agrible joins us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world. You can listen to us online, on demand, anytime you'd like. The address is willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Mike Zuzulo is here now from Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Thanks for being with us, Mike. I take it that it was the outside markets influences other than what's happening in the grains that had the biggest impact in Chicago today.
I felt like, especially for the day, yes, Todd, and I think it was led by the outside markets once again, being the equities and what's going on in China. And I think this all ties together with what you and I have been talking about in the aftermath of the G20 meeting and whether we could put a high in the US dollar and a low in the Chinese currency. Well, that didn't materialize at all this week. In fact, we just made an 18-month high in the dollar today, earlier in the session. The November retail sales for China were at a 15-year low. Their November industrial production numbers at the weakest point in 33 months. Those numbers came out early Friday morning while most of us were probably asleep. And I think it really brought back down the commodity demand perceptions from a standpoint. Their actual imports and China's imports in November were up only 3% versus expectations of almost 15% over the versus the prior month. So I would say bottom lining it out with the corn up about 4 cents, the wheat up about 8 cents, and the beans down about 17 cents for the week. We're not out of the woods yet when it comes to the market's perception about the emerging markets, about the commodity demand, about inflation, because we're still not out of the woods with China yet.
Yeah, so what's the worry here with China? Is it about not getting a tariff and trade deal done, or is it that it's been actually injured enough that it might roll over into the rest of the global economy?
The second, because in fact, it's probably one of the most timely questions I've been asked this week by anybody as far as why are we so worried with this Trump truce in place and with the Federal Reserve truce in place in terms of monetary policy. And there are starting to be more people internally in China and analysts in Asia in general that are getting more and more nervous about not only increasing the problems with property prices going down, but also outright layoffs, outright unemployment going up. And this couldn't come at a worse time for the Chinese government because of their push to rely more upon domestic demand because of these tariffs and because of the world trade issues that we've had the last 4 or 5 months. And so one analyst that I follow and think very highly of was specifically talking about how the numbers that we saw and that I talked to you about just a minute ago probably lead to the conclusion that they're going to have a very rough first half of 2019 in China economically, and that's going to hurt the whole global trade with iron, copper, and even soybeans being, you know, at the forefront of that hit. So we got good news with China coming in and buying the bushels from the United States on soybeans, not as much as the trade wanted, but we got good news, but we really didn't do much with it.
And then, of course, they made some announcements on potential corn purchases as well, though apparently the trade didn't care about that at all. They're waiting to see whether that's going to come true.
Yeah, I think that was the biggest surprise to me because we did have this move back up in the wheat. We did see it get back up to its resistance since August, that 5.25 level. You've got supply demand fundamentals on the side of wheat. You had an outside week higher in the ethanol market on the charts. And these Chinese purchase rumors have been around for about 5 days, but not even the cash market did much good. In fact, I talked to a client up by Rochelle this afternoon, and he said the river bid's actually going wider at this stage. And I know freight rates are up a little bit, but this, I think you're right. This is not materializing in terms of market pricing it in either in the futures or the cash basis markets in corn yet. We'll see if next week brings us any changes to that.
Do you have any sense of whether the truce an agreement would be soon enough to fix the economic damage that may have been done in China?
The analysis I've done, I've started doing winter meetings and was in Kearney, Nebraska earlier this week, and we'll be doing more and more. My analysis would suggest, yes, it is going to, if it lasts past 90 days, it will heal a lot of the wounds economically and trade-wise. We actually have very strong supply-demand export figures year-to-date for meal, for corn, obviously. Even wheat is not that far behind. And the meats are running really nicely, too, marketing year-to-date. I think the problem becomes, Todd, the idea that the investor flows are just not going to get triggered if the dollar doesn't make itself put a high in place. And you interject into that impeachment talk and other things that are going on. I think really almost all roads lead to the dollar. If you want the commodity markets and the grains especially to go higher in a meaningful fashion, I really do think you have to get that outside market issue put to bed in the form of a dollar high and a Chinese currency low.
Does crude oil play a role in this at all?
It does, and it plays a positive role for the most part. If it doesn't go much below $50 a barrel, you've got about six key countries that the WTO, the OECD, the IMF have all put lower growth out there for them in 2019, mainly because they were using oil prices that were $20 to $30 higher than they are right now. So I actually, from an oil import standpoint, in these major countries like India, like China, other Asian countries, I actually like the idea that oil is falling back. What I don't like is the strong correlation between the dollar and the oil, that if the dollar keeps going higher, that will bring in more fund shorts into the crude, and I think it'll spill over in other commodities.
Anything that we should talk about on the livestock side before I let you go?
Yeah, we got up to that 125 level in April fats. I think that's a decent place to start hedging. Overvalue for me is 125.40. I'm also laying some groundwork with the April hogs, getting back down to $70 for some purchases and longs in place there because of the African swine fever.
Hey, thanks so much.
My pleasure, sir. Have a great weekend.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Don't forget, you can join me next week out on the road. I'll be with the agricultural economist on the Illinois Farm Economics Summits. We'll be Monday in Mount Vernon at the Doubletree, in Springfield at the Crown Plaza on Tuesday, the casino. That's the Paradise in Peoria on Wednesday, and at Ferrandez in DeKalb Thursday, back here at the I Hotel in Champaign on Friday of next week. We open our doors at 7:45, start the program at 8:15. In today's Ag News, USDA's Sonny Perdue is heading to the White House at some point today to talk with President Donald Trump about the second wave of trade assistance for farmers, or the MFP. That's the market facilitations payments. Perdue had previously said an announcement would be made around December 3rd. We've reported that. That date, of course, has come and gone. At first, it was delayed by the passing of George H.W. Bush. But now the delay is about money, apparently, with the director of OMB, Rick Mulvaney, holding it up. Perdue told Politico yesterday, "I understand that. I think this is a commitment that the president made. We hope to have it resolved very soon." House Agriculture Ranking Member Colin Peterson, during a KFGO radio interview, mentioned that Perdue, Mulvaney, and Trump were set to meet. OMB has not commented on the situation, though early on it was thought that the MFP was split into two potential payments because it related to some budget issues. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C. for a moment, but make things Illinois-centric, or somewhat Illinois-centric. Senator Richard Durbin, the senior senator from the state, will be joining the Senate Agriculture Committee. Illinois' Dick Durbin is the one Democratic addition to the panel for next year. Senate Agriculture will have only 9 Democrats, meaning the minority party will only get to reclaim one of two committee posts after two of its members lost their recent re-election bids. Those would be Heidi Heitkamp out of North Dakota and Joe Donnelly from Indiana. From the Ag Committee, we go to WOTUS. Water experts around the country are looking at the details of the Trump administration's proposed Waters of the U.S. rule. While the outlines are becoming clear, some of those experts tell Politico that there are different directions the administration could go when the final rule comes out next year. In written language before the actual proposal, the administration asked for comments on several specific alternatives. That's something that might help the administration fight off expected legal challenges to a final rule, especially if it looks quite a bit different from the one proposed this year. The proposal would give protection to streams that flow year-round, as well as intermittent waterways that carry water only at certain times of year. But the EPA and the Army Corps of Engineers asked commenters to weigh in on whether or not the definition should only cover perennial waterways. That would be a much bigger change than what EPA is currently proposing. The text also asked for comments on whether protection should be given to water features that contribute less than intermittent flow. The proposed rule issued this week would dramatically shrink the number of wetlands protected federally by covering only those that touch or have a direct surface water connection with protected rivers, streams, and lakes. And finally today, EPA, back in October, released federal labels for three products that contain dicamba. A DTN report says different state-level restrictions are developing in rural states. For example, Arkansas is considering imposing a May 20th cutoff date, as well as requiring large protective buffers for sensitive crops. Indiana and Minnesota both submitted 24C special local needs labels to the EPA with proposed cutoff dates of June 20th. South Dakota has submitted a similar 24C proposal with a June 30th cutoff date, and North Dakota is considering a similar proposal. Other states are said to be considering additional requirements. Only four states have said they won't add any additional requirements to the federal label. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason. We're now joined by Eric Snodgrass from Agrible. Hey, Eric, thanks much for being with us for the day.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what's been happening with this storm that's run through the South. I think they've gotten an awful lot of rainfall. Can we start there, please?
Yeah. You know, so a week ago, we had that massive blizzard event that hit, the Carolinas. Actually, the snow stretched clear back to northern Texas. But this next system that is coming through doesn't have nearly the cold air to work with. But the problem is it's a real slow mover. So, you know, around here, we've had these off and on rain showers already for the last 24 hours, and we're going to have to deal with them again through tomorrow morning. But that system as it creeps to the south is really just putting a lot of rain down on a place that's been exceptionally wet since August. So we're really soaking the southeast. Now, the thing is that they're going to go into winter without any drought pressure. And that's important as they emerge next spring. But the problem is this much moisture in the soil down there is causing some major headaches. Because remember, they can grow things a lot later in the year than, you know, of course, than we can. But, we're going to have to deal with the rain from this one through tomorrow morning. And then after that, you know, our pattern has already begun this shift that we've been talking about now for a while toward this much, much warmer regime. And as that shift happens, after this system goes by, we're going to probably get maybe to middle of next week before we even have our next chance at some precipitation. And the shift that's going on is really kind of controlled by a few big global players. And one of them is, you know, the kind of fabled polar vortex. And what it's doing is it's retreating. It's been basically occupying much of the eastern half of North America. And it's about ready to make a shift such that the coldest air is going to go over toward Europe and Eurasia for quite some time. And that's just going to allow for the jet stream to kind of flatten out. And the more flat it is, the less of a chance we have toward these big, big, big colder outbreaks. So I'm thinking that the warmer regime that's coming in, now remember, we're talking warmer than average, and it's still December, so it's not as though it's going to be shorts and T-shirts weather. But the warmer regime that's coming in has some legs on it. It might even get us past the Christmas, even toward New Year's before we kind of go back toward a cooler pattern for the eastern part of the country. So this shift that's going on right now is really quite an interesting one, and it's really going to give us a month where it starts off bitterly cold and then trends toward mild at the end of it.
Anything new to talk about in South America?
Yeah, so what's interesting is the same thing that's kind of helping along the pattern shift in North America is actually going to be changing things in South America. And like I said, this thing's got some legs on it too. I don't see a pattern shift changing for us until we get around Christmas, where a trough starts to build out west and gives us, you know, better chances for having more normal storm systems across the country. Same thing's going on in South America. And it's interesting. talk about the atmosphere being connected. What's driving a lot of this is a lot of thunderstorms in the Indian Ocean. And wherever we have those thunderstorms, it puts, you know, air in this rising mode. It goes up high into the troposphere, and that creates this sinking motion in the atmosphere over Brazil. So the next 15 days or so is going to be relatively dry across a big section of Brazil. And southern Brazil has been dry, you know, in the weeks leading up to this. So what we're talking about here is something called the Madden-Julian Oscillation, the MJO, as we like to call it. And it's right now in phase three, and it's going to go toward phase four and five. Now, what does that mean? Well, phase three, four, and five for North America is a relatively warm pattern. For South America, it's a relatively drier pattern. Now, that only extends, that influence only extends for most of Brazil. And I'll tell you, recently in Argentina, just recently, they had a massive squall line, a big line of thunderstorms that went through, doing a lot of damage near Cordoba, Santa Fe, and then over toward Uruguay. Some locations there got several inches of rainfall, but there was also some strong winds and some damaging hail. And I'll tell you something, when I saw it on satellite, this is like one of those thunderstorm complexes we get in the United States, you know, in like June and July, that can cover, you know, an entire state of Illinois. So they just got rocked. So I imagine we're going to hear some local damage reports out of Argentina. So Argentina's having trouble. Brazil's looking dry because of the global tropical weather systems that are going right now. And it'll be something that we'll need to watch as we get our way into January, because if they go too long, too dry, that's going to really start to hurt yields for this first crop, beans.
Let's stay in the southern hemisphere. I haven't checked in on the Australian crops lately. What do we know about them?
Yeah, so here we're primarily concerned about a wheat crop. And remember, they're also going into their spring and summer. And they were really dry in parts of Queensland along the east coast of the continent. But I just was watching in the last 24 hours or so a lot of just sustained thunderstorm activity, which they're going to need to kind of bring their soil moisture up as they progress into their summer. So that would be beneficial. And also, I saw too that New Zealand, of course, we're talking there about cattle and dairy. They also right now have had relatively temperate climate with decent weather so far this year. So no major stresses coming out of New Zealand either.
Okay, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.